This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and Sirius XM Channel 371.
Boston College head coach Joanna Barnaby McNamee will be here at 8:30. She's always been good with us. Looking forward to catching up with her about her team as they begin playing the ACC Women's Basketball Tournament. That event, by the way, opens today. BC plays Florida State tomorrow at 2 o'clock. Nina King, Duke's athletic director, still to come at 9 o'clock. And you may say, well, why are you holding your phone here?
Yeah, why are you doing that?
Because Luke Hancock's joining us, and I'm getting ready to vote at Luke Skywalker 11 on Twitter. Luke, I want you to know, with a little bit of time left in this, I'm getting ready to vote for my player of the year. Because yesterday on Twitter, Luke asked who you got for player of the year in the ACC and why. He gave you Paolo Banchero.
No.
Armando Bacot.
No.
Alondis Williams.
Yes.
Or other.
No. C.
Okay.
You know why I say C? Because Randolph Childress told us yesterday, man, quit it. Stop it. It's over. Player of the year is in Winston-Salem.
Luke?
He said yesterday on the show.
Your response?
I just think it's funny how many people say it's this guy or you're an idiot and you don't know what you're talking about. You have no idea. You've never watched a basketball game in your life. I think those are the funniest responses because you got it from Hubert Davis now all the way to Pack and Randolph Childress. But, you know, to me, I think it's going to be really a two-man race. I think it's Bacot and it's Alondis Williams. The double-double machine in Armando Bacot has been really impressive, especially lately. But if you lead the league in points and assists, and it's the first time that's ever happened, I think winning plays into this, and Alondis Williams leading his team to really dominating where their expectations were coming into this year. I think Steve Forbes done an incredible job of giving him the tools to really run that show. But it's not just him, obviously. Jake LaRavia has been incredible. They've got other pieces. But Alondis Williams, to me, man, as he's called, is going to be player of the year. But it's a really fun race. And when you put up a poll like that, it's really just to get in those mentions and see everybody say, you know, you're an idiot if you don't agree with me.
Well, the key is to make sure they don't say you're an idiot and then give an opinion. I mean, if they give you the idiot at the end, it's all right because they're paying attention to you. It's the people that say, first of all, you're an idiot. And then it doesn't matter what they say after that. So you got to figure out where that part is. But, you know, listen, you got multiple guys to pick from here. We still have some games to be played this week. But I do think the point of a guy that leads the league in scoring and assists in this league that has seen the greatest of the greats play in it, nobody has ever done that before. I mean, come on. What are we talking about? It seems pretty easy.
It does. Again, he's so in control. He's a different guy than we have in this league. Really strong, plays with – he's really heady, goes out there and plays with a chip on his shoulder. I know that gets used a lot. But if you watch Alondis Williams play, he really feels like it's his time to take over every game. I've only really seen Wake Forest frustrated in two games. And I think Syracuse up there at the Carrier Dome. And then against Clemson, obviously, Clemson beat up in that game and still found a way. Great job by Brad Burnell. But, you know, Wake Forest just looked frustrated in that game. If they can stay away from those moments, I haven't seen them often when you have a guy like Alondis Williams at the helm who can just do so much for your basketball team. You're not going to be frustrated often. But if they can stay away from those moments, I think this team will be scary. And Alondis Williams may be the best transfer in the country.
All right, here's the trickier question for you. Who's the coach of the year, Luke?
Oof, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for all the noise. I know I'm going to get a lot of it. I guess Boozer will probably back me up, and that's a good guy to have standing behind me. But I'm going to go Coach K.
Wow.
I'm going to go Coach K. I know there are a lot of deserving coaches. My old coach, Coach Larinaga, down there. So yeah, I'm probably going to get a text here in a minute from him and his staff. You know, Steve Forbes has done a really impressive job again. I mentioned him earlier. But, you know, Coach K has really dealt with the expectations and everything, all the noise that comes along with this final run. Every game has been packed. Every game has been incredibly emotional. And they've had to parade Coach K out there and give him stuff and have this emotional, you know, moment before every game. You know, Tony Bennett before that game about made me cry before they played Virginia, and he's had that kind of everywhere that he has gone. What a career. It's been a long time since he's won Coach of the Year. I think the way they've stepped up, the way they've handled expectations, the way they've gotten better throughout this season, This is a tremendous job by Coach K. I get it. It's not an award for your body of work. Brian Ives told me it's not a lifetime achievement award. And I understand that. But, you know, think about last year, you're taking away key pieces to a team. You're taking away a leading scorer in Matthew Hurd, a first round draft pick in DJ Stewart. And you're bringing back a few of those pieces. And you've got to add in the next group, the next set of talented freshmen. And he did it really, really well this year. I know that John Shires had a lot more responsibility. So, you probably give him half a nod for Coach of the Year. But I'm going with Coach K. I think it's really impressive. Just managing these expectations, being able to rise to the occasion every single night. The lights are brightest on Duke this year in particular. And he's answered the call for sure.
Luke, I've got three words for you for your choice.
Uh-oh.
You're an idiot.
Fitty.
You are an idiot. You know what? He was picked first. He is in first. I mean, that he's got the best players. He's a brilliant coach, the greatest I've ever seen from that perspective. And what's going to happen Saturday night is going to be incredibly emotional for all of us that have watched this from day one. But listen, he gets a lot of accolades. The guy's been brilliant with what he's done. But, you know, you got two coaches that were picked by us in the media, 12th and 13th respectively. And you know what? They're fighting for a chance to be in the double bye. I mean, your man Larinaga, if he doesn't text you during this interview, I'll be disappointed. I know he's got a game against BC, but Miami, what they've done. I mean, nobody thought they were a double bye team. Same thing with Wake Forest. I mean, great jobs. And Mike Bray, let's give him some love too. I mean, goodness gracious, Notre Dame. Yeah. Nobody was barking about the Irish being one of these teams that could be in first place by the end of the regular season. We got a number of guys to pick from. And to me, as long as you got options, that's a good thing.
I totally agree. And I probably will get a little flack from Coach L and company. I'm all right with that. I think that backcourt, you know, they have a lot of guys in the backcourt that can really go. But what they've done in terms of being able to kind of mask their thin front court with defense, just, I mean, the job he's done in scheming, getting these small guards to be able to help out some of the post defenders, win big games. And you think about how close Miami is to having just an incredible record. You know, you saw the end of the Virginia Tech game recently, but Florida State is a 1-point game both ways. They had that crazy first half, second half game, and then they had a really tough call at the buzzer on a foul. You know, they've been in every game, and they're really close to having an incredible record, like I said. But Steve Forbes, the pieces, the way he's kind of got these guys to meld together, absolutely incredible. Jake LaRavia out of Indiana State, I mean, who would have thought how well this guy's playing. I mean, he should be in the conversation at least to be on first team. I don't know if he's going to quite make it. Cam Augusti's in that conversation with Miami. And then Notre Dame, like you mentioned, this is a bunch of seniors that are hungry to make the NCAA tournament. But the two guys that they have this year that they haven't had in the past that changed the dynamic for Notre Dame, Paul Atkinson Jr. is now a guy you can throw the ball to on the block and expect without a double team that he's going to be able to make a play to score or find somebody. Everyone's a willing passer. Everybody can shoot. We've known that for Notre Dame for a long time, but he helps them so much on the defensive end. And it's the same thing with Blake Wesley. He's long, he's athletic, but they haven't had a guy who can really attack the rim to get fouled, to go finish above the rim, that can be this dynamic playmaker. I mean, Prentice Hubb, really smooth player, can get anywhere he wants on the court, but he's just a smaller guard. I mean, Blake Wesley has given them a new dynamic in that backcourt, and you notice who has the ball late in games. I mean, you got Dane Goodwin out there and Leshefsky, you got Cormac Wright, you got all these upperclassmen. Look at who has the ball late in the game for Notre Dame. That's Blake Wesley.
Luke, I want to get in. I want to take you back 9 years, okay, to your team that obviously won the title in Atlanta, beat Duke in the regional final, right? I mean, to advance to Atlanta for the Final Four. We just spent a segment talking about percentage of starters' minutes on the floor. Take me through where you gauge that value, the depth factor, once we get to Brooklyn next week. Once we... You know, if you have to play Wednesday, Thursday, Friday to get to Saturday next week, you know, we all know about the Thursday, Saturday, Friday, Sunday the following week. But next week in Brooklyn, who do you lean toward? I mean, Packer and I were talking in the opening segment. Duke's trimmed it down to 7. I mean, it's Theo John, it's Jeremy Roach, and Joey Baker. Here's a coffee cup full of minutes later in the game. I mean, that's about it. who do you favor in a situation? Oh, look at that now. God bless you for the Packer and Durham mug. who do you lean toward in a scenario like that from the teams you've watched this year?
Yeah, I think it's stylistic. You know, I think you got to look at the way teams play. I remember playing against Syracuse, and I watched part of their shoot around before we played them up at the Carrier Dome before we got into the tournament that year. And these guys, you know, half of them don't even have their shoes fully tied. I mean, they're out there just shooting jumpers and finding their spots. And I was just looking around like, this can't be their actual walkthrough. You know, we're full sweat, taped, ankles taped. You know, you better be all out ready to play. It's coach's last opportunity to really see you before you go out there on the floor. And if you mess up and walk through, you're not playing. Their walkthrough was very different. You know, you can imagine on the defensive side, they pretty much know what's going on. They're probably more film based than they are actually getting out there and running through stuff in terms of how they're going to adjust on the defensive end. And then it's more, how do we focus in, get our shots on the offensive end? Teams like Syracuse, you saw it last year when Jimmy Buckets got so hot, maybe the hottest player in the country at the end of the season last year. That's a team that is prepped and ready for tournament play. And I asked Coach Boeheim about minutes in one of the Monday Zoom calls, and he talked about guys want to play big minutes. This is what we train for. We prep our guys in a specific way that they know we're not going to play 10, 12, 13 guys. They're going to have to play a lot of minutes if they're going to play at Syracuse. That's what these guys want to do. So I would look at a team like that, a team of veterans like Notre Dame that can really control the pace of the game. Virginia's probably a little tougher because they're so hard-nosed on defense. They really get after you and guard the ball so tough. But if I'm looking stylistically, I look at Syracuse. If I'm thinking about just overall depth, I think that's what's taken Duke's team from good to great, is developing that bench. I don't know if you guys felt this way, but early on, you know, I thought it was Trevor Keels and Paolo Banchero. You know, Mark Williams is going to protect the basket. Wendell Moore's playing great. Jeremy Roach got to run the show. And I had some question marks with the rest of those guys. But now, I know you said he's trimmed it down. The impact you get from those guys that step into the game and how he's kind of trimmed this rotation so guys know, hey, this is when you got to step up. This is when we're going to you. Those things are really important when you get into postseason runs. And you're also going to know, hey, you know, I know they smoked Pitt yesterday. You know, hey, it's time for you to go sit down in tournament play. We'll go give you a break after a good first half or a good first half in a few minutes in the second. So I think these coaches know that, coaches like Coach K and Jim Boeheim. So I would lean towards those guys stylistically, Syracuse, though.
Luke, I'm going to get to your hometown there and your team.
Do we have to, Pat?
No, we do, and I'll tell you why. Because I think Louisville plays a really important role in the future of ACC basketball, because it's a market that understands it, it cares, there's passion for it, and Louisville needs to be good for the ACC. This is a transitive period for the conference. Coach K, adios. Roy Williams, last year, see ya. Boeheim, Larrañaga, you know, there will be a time here in the near future where they go, hey, it's time to go fishing or go vacation or do whatever. Louisville's going to be, I think, a key piece for the ACC moving forward in the short term and hopefully long term. So it's important for them to get this right. I know this year has been a total train wreck, and it has been. No Malik Williams last night. Don't know the details of that. Go to Virginia Tech, they get smoked. Hadn't lost those guys since 91. What do you hear as far as the next coach? Is there anything else brewing that we have not heard about regarding Louisville basketball and its future in the short term?
You know, I can't throw a name out there that anybody hasn't heard already. I know Kenny Payne's name has been thrown around quite a bit. I've heard Mick Cronin, and I've heard quite a few names lately. But ultimately, I like the fact that they're kind of keeping this close to the chest right now. I think if you have a winning coach and they've expressed interest through agents, you guys know how this works now. You don't want them, you know, singing to the rooftops that they're over here interested in the Louisville job if they have a quality team right now. I don't think anything happens until we get to the end of the season, good or bad. I know a lot of people have talked about, let's get somebody in there so they can start recruiting and start to turn the ship around right away. You know, that all sounds good, but you want coaches that are dedicated to the guys that they've recruited. And so I think this transition happens at the end of the year. I think that we're down here at the bottom right now in Louisville in terms of where this basketball program is. I don't think you really start going the right direction until you get through the NCAA stuff. I've mentioned that on here before. At least they have a date for the IARP. You know, it's going to be a process. They're going to have some kind of punishment. And you got to get through it. You got to put it behind you. The guys that you're recruiting now, the freshmen that you're going to have coming in, were in middle school when these infractions happened. The process has taken too long. The process is the punishment around here. They've just had a black cloud over the program for a long time. And then, you know, I said this last time, I think I was on radio with UPAC, but that six-game suspension, the dynamic of good cop, bad cop that is head coach, assistant coach, it was so much more impactful than people thought around here. You know, you have six games. Mike Pagisco's 5-1. Everybody's slapping hands. They win a holiday tournament, or they go down to the Bahamas and win that tournament early. Mm-hmm. Everybody's excited and feeling good. And then an old-school coach like Chris Mack comes back around and says, you know, we're not doing things the way I want them done. And he gives them the tough love. And that dynamic just really messed with the locker room, the emotions, the mental for these guys. And it's been really tough to recover. And you mentioned Malik Williams not being there. I feel bad, man. I just remember my college basketball experience. And to be a fifth-year senior, to have gone through injuries, to have battled so much, to have a guy, you know, not be able to put some things to the side and just focus on hoops and enjoy hoops. You know, you just don't get this time back. You know, if you go right to the NBA, you can get traded or whatever, a different situation. In college, you're hanging out with your best buddies. You're working towards a common goal. You're supposed to be having this great experience. And I feel bad for the it's across the country, but Louisville in particular right now, for the teams that are struggling, and these guys just don't have that old man perspective. I'm getting some gray hairs now, so I can say that.
Real quick, a lot has been made about no president, no AD. And Josh Hurd apparently is a candidate. When they start looking for the athletic director, the interim AD will be a candidate from everything that I've read and kind of heard. If this is – Louisville can make this hire right now whether he is or isn't, and without a president, if what in your mind?
If you find the right guy. You know, I think it has to almost be a no-brainer if it's that good, if it's that clean. You know, Josh Hurd should be mentioned. I got a lot of respect for somebody who starts from the bottom. Mm-hmm. You know, if you're working in a restaurant and you start cleaning floors and then you make French fries and then you go make shakes and then you become a manager and then you become an owner, that's the kind of guy that I want running my restaurant. If I'm thinking about an AD spot, I get it. These are big CEO level jobs, and you got to wear a lot of hats. You got to fundraise. You got to run the athletic program. There's a lot more that goes into it than I think people realize. But if you've kind of worked your way up step by step by step, been a part of this program in the past, and really developed with it, I think those are all great, great qualities. I don't think you should be the only person on the list. Just like I don't think you should be singular focused with a basketball coach. This is going to be an incredible opportunity for somebody. And I get it. There's a little cloud over the program, but you can kind of see through that right now with some dates. So in terms of president, in terms of AD, they're going to make the right hire, somebody who wants to be a part of this program for a long time. But I don't think there's anything wrong with hiring an interim that's really, you know, he's got some elbow grease. He's really worked his way up, and I got a lot of respect for that. Maybe all not right. The flashy guy, but I got respect for that.
All right, look forward to seeing you Saturday. Really interested to see the Boozer Joel Berry dynamic on display when we get there on Saturday, by the way.
You guys have heard about the bet, right?
No.
I'm pretty sure that there is a jersey exchange that might have to go down if one team wins. You know, my question is, Boozer is going to not fit very well into Mr. Joel Berry's jersey. Joel Berry will be fine slipping on the big boy Boozer jersey. I don't know how it's going to work if Duke does wind up with an L this weekend.
I thought it might have something to do with Boozer's hat. I'm glad it's just jerseys.
Yeah, I thought we were going to have some kind of hat deal, scarf and hat combination.
I'll make sure he gives you guys some fashion advice, kind of cleans it up a little bit
well,
for
Packer's
you.
Packer's going to wear a tie for the curtain call broadcast. Packer's got to wear a tie, Luke. Packer hadn't put on a tie in years.
That's not true. Every 100 shows, I put on a tie.
There you go.
That's it.
Bocelli, I mean, come on. I heard all about this. You being refined and winding up.
Yeah, that wasn't a coat and tie opportunity. I mean, that was just a loss of a lot of cash. Yeah. But that was one of the best investments. Speaking of investments, that was one of my best personal investments ever, taking Mrs. P to a Bocelli.
Yeah. Hey,
I got all the mental notes.
Yeah. See you Saturday. Thanks, Luke.
Thanks, guys. See you guys soon.
All right. Luke Hancock, part of our Nothing But Net crew. Don't forget that crowd will be live on site in Durham, pregame, postgame.
We'll see him there.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Maybe we'll drive by, do a drive-by. We'll get invited to the desk, maybe. Never know.
We just need a good parking spot. That's why Nina King.
Nina King coming on at 9 for parking? Is that the only reason we've...
No.
Nina, but it's the big reason.
When Nina was announced as the new boss, she was awesome on the show. No she question. Was really, really impressive. So maybe, you know... little spot in Krzyzewskiville, park the Ford F-150. Can't miss it. Have the blimp tied to the back of the truck.
You and Debbie be coming in there on two wheels anyway from Greensboro.
I told her I'd take her over there.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Hey, don't forget Nothing But Net Thursday night from the Coliseum in Greensboro. First couple days of the ACC Women's Basketball Tournament. They'll recap the action for you, preview Friday, get you ready for semifinal Saturday, give you concepts and ideas, analysis, highlights, and more. Kelsey Riggs with Kelly Gramlich, Muffet McGraw, and Chelsea Gray. All there for you in Greensboro at the Coliseum for the ACC Women's Basketball Tournament. What are you working on there?
Just working on some
stuff.
Got them
fashion glasses on.
Yeah, I found these the other day.
Yeah, like, look at these fashion glasses that my man wears. Look at it. Looks like you went to L.A., got some glasses.
Yeah, I don't go to L.A.
Yeah, it looks like L.A. glasses.
I don't go to L.A.
Got the frame with the little line across the top. Looks like titanium.
Well, that's you over there. Wes.
Yeah, you can see. With your...
All right, let's go to Bristol. Smart
Voice
people.
Of victory, ladies and gentlemen. It's time for another franchise portion of the program, fill in the blank. All right, who we got over the right shoulder over there staring over the monitor?
It's Adam.
Adam. Good morning, Adam. Great to have you with us. It's okay to wave, Adam. You're on television.
And we've promised no BPI discussion, so we're all safe in here.
So far, so good. True. Over. Bark.
Go, Josh. Please. Hurry.
First one. So there are 7 teams combined that have clinched double byes in the ACC tournaments. Of course, all 4 are locked in on the women's side, 3 on the men's side.
Yes.
Blank of those 7 teams will ultimately reach the semifinals of their respective conference tournaments.
6.
5.
Mm, 6.
Still confident.
Wait a minute. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. I'm going to go 1 and upset. I'm going to throw an upset in and go 5.
Okay. 1 to go, and I'm taking 6.
Yep.
Okay. Next one. There's a little.
Wait a minute. Before we get to the next one, I think you could see one on the women's side. You agree with that?
Yes, I do.
Okay. You and I are thinking the same way.
Right. And the other thing is, handy dandy, only 17 times in the history of the ACC tournament have the top 4 teams made the semifinals on the men's side.
So you think one on both sides? There'll be one? Oh, you think there's more than one on the women's side? I think there's one.
No. If there is one, it's just one on the women's side. I'm actually projecting of the 5 I saw up there, of the 7 I saw up there, I think 2 could potentially not make the men's side. I would take one on the women's side.
Which
one
would be
on the
a grand total of how many then, Wes?
That would be 3.
Out of 8 would be equals what?
5.
And you said 6.
No, but I said 6 because I think it's 1 on each side. If there's not one on the women's side, I'm saying there's 2 on the men's side. I know what the heck I'm saying.
So you're the one.
I love Wes Durham, man. I swear to God, we get into math and it becomes a train wreck.
No, what I'm saying is,
I heard you.
One on the women's side,
right,
and
one.
If not one on the women's side, 2 on the men's side. So in other words, I'm telling you that the women could go chalk. I don't think there will be. I'm picking one on each side.
I listened. You said there will be one on the women's side.
And one on the men's side. If you want to go that route, it'll be one of two ways. One on the men, one on the women, or two on the men.
Hey, we're out of time. What a segment.
Go ahead, Josh. One more. Make it a good one.
Yeah, let's see if we can get one more in here.
I'm going to combust right here trying to explain myself.
You may have heard there's a game of basketball being played at Cameron Indoor Stadium on Saturday evening. Armando Bacot will be participating in that game. He has 18 rebounds in each of his last two games. But in the first matchup against Duke, Bacot only brought in 5. Bacot. Blank rebounds against the Blue Devils on Saturday night.
Well, he only had 5 in the first because he sat for 17 minutes.
He's going to get rebounds.
Yeah, I'm going to say he'll get 11.
Yeah, he'll double digit.
He and Mark Williams will be fun to watch Saturday night.
Yeah, the key, though, is to make sure North Carolina doesn't get blown out of the building where all of a sudden it's like, okay, what are we doing here? I think it'll be double digits, too.
Yeah,
Carol, he's been consistently good all season.
I think the singular key for North Carolina on Saturday night is perimeter shooting.
Of course.
It is. That's a must. Armando Bacot aside, Carolina has to hit jump shots. Yeah,
Caleb Love needs to go bonkers.
Caleb Love, who had 2 great games as a freshman against Duke, hey, cannot throw the El Dosarito like he did in the first 36 minutes the other night.
That's exactly right. 100% right.
Is that it?
No, we get one more.
Come on, we got to get one more in.
One more.
You want one more?
Sure. Coach Mack and Cornhole coming up.
All right. Tommy Tanks has a bunch of home runs, 9 of them to be exact, in 8 games. It'll take him blank games to hit the 20 mark.
20.
9 and 8. I'm going to go 25. I mean, eventually somebody's going to wise up and say, hey, man, this dude with a beard keeps hitting him to Durham. Let's not pitch to him anymore. It'll slow up. But, man, he has been a blast to watch.
When does Elliot Avick come back on this show and tell us why he didn't talk about Tommy White?
You know what? Sometimes better left unsaid.
He did it to Gilio and our friend Joe Ovius in Raleigh, too.
Well, I think Coach knew, you know what, I might have something here. Let's just keep everybody quiet and let everybody figure out what 47 is going to do. I think folks will eventually start figuring out, we can't throw it to this dude. Let's put him on first base because he's just been awesome. So I'm going to go a little higher than 20. I'll go 25. But, man, he's been a blast. I'm telling you, every time he's got a bat in his hand, you got to watch and see what's going on.
Crazy. Like the gold chain, the beard, long hair.
Just beats on
it's
it.
It's like Gorman Thomas. He's got the baby Gorman
Brewer.
Thomas, yeah.
I know who you're talking about.
Some of you kids need to look up, Google the Gorman Thomases of the world.
The Brew Crew, man. They were great.
Harvey's Wallbangers, remember?
Yes, sir. Robin Yount.
Yeah. Cecil Molitor. Cooper. Paul Molitor.
Know all about them.
Gorman Thomas.
They were great.
Packer and Durham. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Appreciate Luke Hancock joining us. The ladies, though, take center stage beginning today in Greensboro.
All right, let's go to Greensboro, please. Joanne Barnaby-McNamee is the coach of Boston College. She's been with us before. She's fabulous, and we are delighted to welcome her back to the Packer and Durham program. Okay, I'll do this before we get to the questions. Winners of 3 straight and 4 of their last 5. Pack, feeling the vibe, going to the tournament. Get Florida State tomorrow. At least you know who you play, right? You don't have to spend a busy day hassling with the scout, right? That's got to be a confident feeling, right?
Definitely. And we played them just 4 games ago, which is, it wasn't a good game for us. So that maybe, hopefully, we feel like we have something to prove. That's the goal.
But at the same time, winning 3 straight, 4 out of 5, getting a couple road wins along the way at Duke, at Syracuse, you got to feel a little bit of momentum going to this event, right?
Yeah, especially I think the last couple games we shot the ball really well. And in tournament time, you know, you always say like you got to have your defense and your rebounding travel. But I think at the end of the day, the team that shoots the ball a little bit better than the other team is usually who wins. Sometimes basketball seems to be that simple.
Coach, it's been interesting for us to talk to players the last week or two as far as – I know you worry about the next game exclusively. I get all that. But do you do a little sneak peek as far as the net? Do you do a sneak peek as far as, hey, are we in or are we out? Are we on the bubble? What do we have to do? I'm going to ask you that question. I know Florida State is the exclusive mindset for you and your team, but this one feels like it's more than just a game coming up. This one's got repercussions, big picture. At least feels that way.
Yeah, I mean, maybe this is wrong of me, but I feel like the last five have felt like that.
Right.
So every game is like, okay, we've got to get this one or else, you know, we may not have that, you know, be able to achieve our end of the season goal. So every game has kind of been like that, but it is just looking at the next game. So, of course, I wish we were more in the clear, but I think right now Florida State, we're looking at that. We know how much is at stake for what we have in the big picture for our, you know, team goal, which is to make it to the NCAA tournament. But we also know we want to do great in the ACC tournament in one game at a time. So you're right. It's, you know, it's all we're thinking about, but there is a lot more at stake for this game.
And coach, you know, players are smart. I mean, you know, kids know, right? Kids. I mean, I know you could sit there and say, listen, it's all outside noise, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, so do you have that open conversation with them, or is it just assumed that, hey, we know what the task is, let's go. If you want to waste time worrying about net, are we in, are we out, a bubble, up, down, in, out, whatever. So how do you handle that with the crew, big picture?
We have smart players. And like you said, there's, with social media and everything else that's out there, it's not, nothing is a secret. You're not keeping anything from them. So, you know, when we watched film yesterday, that was the first thing we said was, hey, everybody lock in. This is an important game. We all know what's at stake. Let's, you know, really hone in on our strengths and watch this film, because we have to go on this business trip with one thing in mind, and that's to get the next win. Not just because it's the ACC, but you look at every game like that. But I think it adds more excitement to the game for both teams, because it's very important for them as well.
I want to put program in perspective here a little bit while we're talking about now. I mean, look, you won 10 games in the ACC. I mean, you've done this job now. I mean, far cry from a couple of years ago now, right? I mean, you've put this thing together and got it in motion where you guys have got to feel good about where this program is. Bigger picture here, phenomenal what the work you've done in the ACC.
Yeah, I mean, I have this crazy great staff that works their butt off every day. And most importantly, I have these players that love each other. They've been here. You know, we have a group of five seniors that have been here together 4 years, and everybody stuck to it. You know, with the day in this day and age of transferring and people leaving and going here and there, I'm just so proud of this group for sticking together and helping us build a culture at Boston College that it is a culture that I think is now going to be here to stay. You know, we say great players graduate, move on, but culture stays. And that's something that these five players are leaving, a legacy of Boston College that I know they can be really proud of.
Coach, last year we saw Jen Hoover at Wake have that dream of, hey, you know what? I played in this NCAA tournament. I want to get my program there. And they made it. And I still remember selection day that when Wake's name was called, just that euphoric feeling that, hey, we did it. We've made the tournament. For you folks, 2006, the last time you're in the NCAA tournament, I know Florida State, like I said, is the sole purpose, and that's the only thing you're worried about. But I know you close your eyes at night and say, you know what, we're going to get there. And when we do, I mean, what a feeling, right? I mean, 2006 was a long time ago since BC was last in this tournament. Big picture.
Yeah, and I think when you have, honestly, the players that we have that really care about each other, that have worked, that are very selfless, you just want it so bad for them. And I think anybody that's a part of our program and knows our players, they feel the same way. They know how much blood, sweat, and tears they've put into the Boston College program and know how hard our staff works at preparing them. And, you know, I definitely, even you just talking about it right there, my heart kind of flutters because I want it for them so bad. I want it for myself, of course, but they're the big reason why, you know, we work hard, just to see them accomplish what they've put their mind to and what we talked about, you know, when they were just baby freshmen 4 years ago. This is where we want to be.
All right, so Cam Schwartz, Taylor Soule, those were the brand names we knew at the beginning of the year, right? Those are the players that if you knew you were going to have this kind of year, they were going to have to lead you. Maria Gakdang, we did not know. And now she's had a phenomenal campaign for you. What has caught your eye? Is anything about her game surprised you in this campaign?
I think her ability to be consistent has surprised me. I knew, and we knew when we were working with her throughout the summer and in the preseason, that she was going to be something special. I think I've had many meetings with her where I said I think she could be one of the most talented players to ever graduate and put on a Boston College uniform. With that being said, I am so proud of her with how consistent she has made her game throughout the course of this year, because that is not easy to do as a freshman, especially when it's the first time you've had college classes thrown at you, a schedule, you're on your own. There's just so many factors that go into being a freshman that are very much like burning your candle at both ends. And she has taken everything in stride, and she's an unbelievable person. And she makes time on the daily to get in the gym and put in a little extra work. And I think that shows with the way her footwork has improved. When we were at Syracuse in their practice facility, they had one of those things on the wall that measures your wingspan. And we were pretty impressed. She has a 6'7" wingspan. Mm. So that's pretty unbelievable. Well, I think mine was like 5'3".
we just ran her regular season numbers. And I want to point out that her in-conference numbers are better than her regular season numbers. I mean, she's averaging 9 and about 8 a game against the league. I mean, her numbers in the regular season, maybe there was an adjustment period, and I know you play more non-conference at the front than league, but good heavens, it just seems to be layering for her. Every time I see a number, it's double-double or close, and she's impacting the game. And you put her with Taylor and Cam, and I know Michaela Dickens has played well and things like that, but it just looks like that this was, I don't want to say missing piece, Joanna, because I want to be respectful of the job you've done, but this singular player has done a lot to help your program, and I think it's kind of made your team a threat here.
No, I agree, and I think when you look at the amazing centers that are in our conference that she has to go up night in and night out against and who she has to defend, between what she does on the defensive end and then what we ask her to do on the offensive end, I mean, she's a big cog in what we do. She's, you know, we always say our point guard and our center really run our offense for us. And as a freshman, that's hard to do. And she's really been consistent and great and steady and someone that the team can count on. And I think you saying she's the missing piece, there is probably a player on our team that wouldn't 100% agree.
Coach, yesterday when we made the announcement of the first team, second team, and so forth, it really became very apparent that in the league, I don't remember it ever being as deep, not only with quality teams, but players. I mean, all of a sudden we got to the second team, you're like, wow, they're not on the first team. The league is stupid.
Yeah, I said
good.
The same thing.
Right? I mean, I'm sure, you got to live it. You got a front row seat. But, I mean, it's going to only make what happens in Greensboro this week that much more intriguing, because, I mean, there really isn't an easy one here. I mean, this is every night you go to play, man, the other team's got some stars. I don't think I've ever seen ACC women's basketball as good as far as quality players, teams, and coaches as we've got right now. So what you've accomplished makes it even that much more impressive, to be honest with you. There's no easy ones here.
No, I agree. And we said it too, that the teams are all so talented. And you know, I said it yesterday and I mean it. If I was picking a team and I had everybody to choose from in our conference or even across the country, there's no way I'm not taking Cam and T-Soul on my team. And, you know, again, Taylor Soul has to guard the other team's best player every night as well. So she has the highest motor, I think, of any college player right now, in my opinion.
All right. So you're in Greensboro. You're staying downtown. They're in the Gate City. You can do some things, but I know you well enough to know you've been on this show. You like competitive little things that go on today, so you'll go get a little workout in at some point, and there'll be a practice session. There'll be some competitive stuff there. But I know there's a cornhole board somewhere in that hotel.
Jeez, I wish. I'm going to have to look. If you guys know any place that has one. We actually taught we played some euchre last night, though, so that was fun. I taught a couple people how to play euchre on the staff, so that was good.
All right, give us the lowdown.
You guys don't know anything about that game.
I don't know.
No, what is that? Is that a card game?
That's like the Midwest version of spades.
Oh.
Card game.
So not only is she cornhole proficient, she's a swindler with cards, too, we're finding out.
Yeah, we're finding out that going to bring her A game when the card game starts.
Yeah, apparently.
This McNamee cat now, let me tell you, You can't trust her anywhere, man. Cornhole is one thing because you got a cold beverage in one hand. I mean, but now we're going with cards? Yeah. Oh, watch out.
Okay.
Watch out. All right. Watch out. By the way, here's something we do need to find out from you, though. Mm. We've been asking the coaches this question.
Yeah.
Coach, what's your walk-up music? What for you personally, what's your go-to walk-up music? Whether it be game day or you're going to go swindle somebody on the card table?
Oh, man. They were actually making fun of me last night because my music is so – they were all saying I was putting them to sleep. My music is very – I don't even know that I have a genre. It's like the Lumineers and Mumford & Sons and very like the Avett Brothers in your area. That's kind of your area group.
Yeah.
So I don't even know what genre that is, but it's kind of sleepy but mellow, kind of puts you in the right mood to play some cards, throw some cornhole.
Yeah. All right.
Walk out and win a game.
Can we tell you what Wes Moore's is? Are you kind of interested just off the top?
Yes, I want to know what Wes's is.
Beyonce's Drunk in Love.
That's good.
I was so disappointed, though. I was so disappointed. I was hoping for Texas Swing. I was hoping for, like Bob Wills and the Texas Playboys or
old George Strait.
And I got Beyonce.
Yeah.
I cannot tell you how crushed I was.
Whenever we're a little bit running behind with the music in practice, I always say, hey, if someone doesn't start playing something, I'm going to play my playlist, and that gets everybody moving.
There you go.
My playlist never makes the cut.
Well, listen, good luck. Hope to see you Friday.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I hope you do too.
Yeah, Joanna Barnaby McNamee, one of our favorites. Good luck in Greensboro at the ACC Women's Tournament. They play Florida State tomorrow.
The big game.
Yeah, it's an 8-9er.
Big that you talk about, like bubblicious kind of game. Both of them have a chance. Just saying, that's a big W for somebody.
And the winner would get top seed NC State at 2 on Friday.
They'd love that opportunity. Tell you that much.
Yeah. Tournament starts today. Syracuse and Clemson at 1. Duke Pitt at 3:30. Wake Forest in Virginia is the night session at 6:30. Those games available to you on ACC.
I didn't know Coach was a card shark, too. I just assumed board games, cornhole, she's good to go. Now, all of a sudden, she's bringing out a deck of cards. She's my partner.
I don't want to get out over our skis here, but I know we're potentially going to be involved in the spring meetings at Amelia Island in Florida.
Oh, we are?
Oh, potentially. I think it's a potential.
I don't get those memos. I don't look at ESPN.
I don't get those memos either.
I'm starting to need to do that.
But here's a thought. If we are, I think we've got to find a way to turn on the competitive light for some. And the cornhole board might do it if we can come up with a Packer and Durham ACC Network cornhole board.
Excuse me, we can't get a mug. What makes you think that we got cornhole boards going to be created?
We'll rent one.
Oh, we're going to rent one. Is that in your budget? Are you putting that on the flight from Delta down from Cartersville?
Nah, I'll rent it there. Go to Fernandina and rent one.
Okay.
Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
There are many amazing stories. One was one of the biggest games we played in my junior year. It's the Duke North Carolina game, and it was for all the marbles at that time. He comes in to give our pregame talk, and he just looks around the room, and all eyes were just fixated on him, and he kind of stares and looks around, and he said, "Let's go." And there was no more to be said. Like, that's when he was feeling the room or feeling us, and I'm thinking about it now, and it gives me some chills to remember that moment, because it was the ultimate way of saying to us that he had confidence, and there was nothing else to say. And it was nothing more to go over. He didn't say anything. And how cool is that, and how astute is he to be able to feel that, read that, and then instill confidence in us in only a way that he can with his presence.
I will will say that's pretty much how we do this show. We kind of show up at 6:30 in the morning, and we look around the room and look at Captain Ron and Robert and Otto and Chester and Fuller, and me and you stare at each other
and say, let's
don't
go.
Don't say anything. We just say, let's go.
Let's go.
That's how it works. The motivating factors that have happened in his tenure are legendary.
Right.
With Mike Krzyzewski. I mean, obviously great players, no doubt. And he's a great coach. But, man, when you hear the stories, and again, that's some of the stuff that we're going to be doing Saturday night. Because we will be telling stories Saturday night with our dog and pony show. But, man alive, what a run for Coach K.
Yep.
He's still not done.
No. And this is going to get interesting next week because there is a reason for him to potentially be voted the Coach of the Year. And I think because it's his last ride, I think he has a chance to win Coach of the Year. I think there'll be enough people that subscribe to the fact that this is his last ride, and he's not won it in 22 years. Steve Forbes, Jim Larrañaga, Mike Bray, all incredibly deserving candidates. Based on just where they were picked in the preseason poll, if nothing else. As Pac alluded earlier with Luke, picked one and finished one, you don't think about it. But depending on how this panel of folks now who vote in the All-ACC and for Coach of the Year, I think this is going to get really interesting. I really do. He's had 5 regular season titles since 2000, including this year, but has not been Coach of the Year since 2000. Now, does the best coach in the country with the best talent win Coach of the Year every time? Apparently not, because he's had a lot of really good teams. But I understand your theory. Picked one, finishes one. Look at Forbes, look at Larrañaga, look at what they've done. And it's an amazing accomplishment. What Steve Forbes has done and Jim Larrañaga this year, it's remarkable.
All I'm going to say is I'm assuming the people that voted the preseason rankings are the same people that are voting for this. Is that
not
right?
Necessarily?
Is that, all right, then all bets are off then, because I don't vote, so I have no earthly idea.
Yeah.
But all I know is that the media picked Wake and Miami 12 and 13, whatever the combination.
Sure.
One of them was 12, one of them was 13, and one of them, in all likelihood, is going to have a double bye.
Yeah.
So choose your poison. But Kay's done a brilliant job. I mean, forget about Lifetime Achievement Awards. We know where he stands on that at the very top. But, you know, this year's team was expected to be great. And right now, Duke's exactly where we all thought they would be heading in the first week of March.
Yeah,
that's
Mike Bray.
First place.
Mike Bray, by the way, picked 8th in the preseason, has a chance to finish 16-4.
And second, maybe tied for first.
Yeah, who knows?
You never know.
Tune into Packer and Durham weekday mornings from 7 to 10 Eastern for the best conversations about everything from the ACC. Find it on the ACC Network, SiriusXM Channel 371, and streaming on the ESPN app.